Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So today we are continuing with Canto 10, Chapter 25. And the two texts for today are Text 16 and Text 17, although we shall read two texts that was scheduled for yesterday prior to coming to text 17 that we'll chant responsibly. So I'm going to read those two texts and then we can chant. So text 14. Seeing the inhabitants of his Gokula rendered practically unconscious by the onslaught of hail and blasting wind, the Supreme Lord Hari understood that this was the work of angry Indra. Purport. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that the severe distress Indra apparently inflicted upon the residents of Vrindavan was an arrangement made by Sri Krishna's pastime potency to enhance the loving dealings between the residents and the Lord. The Acharya gives the analogy that for a hungry person, the pain of hunger increases the happiness he feels when he finally eats excellent food, and thus hunger can be said to enhance the pleasure of eating. Similarly, the residents of Vrindavan, although not experiencing ordinary material anxiety, felt a type of distress at the activities of Indra, and thus intensified their meditation on Krishna. When the Lord finally acted, the result was wonderful. In text 17, Sri Krishna said to himself, because we have stopped his sacrifice, Indra has caused this unusually fierce, unseasonable rain together with terrible winds and hail. And text 16, and then we'll chant text 17 together. Tatra pravishim samyag atma yogena sadaye lokesha maninam udayat tanishye shri madam tamaha. And the translation for text 16. By my mystic power, I will completely counteract this disturbance caused by Indra. Demigods like Indra are proud of their opulence, and out of foolishness, they falsely consider themselves the Lord of the universe. I will now destroy such ignorance. And text 17, which you can chant responsibly. Nahi sad bhava yuktanam suranam isha vishmayam Mato satamana bhagaha. Prasamayo pakalpate. Nahi sadbhava yuktanam. Suranam isha vishmayam mato satamana banga prashamayo pakalpate nahi sadbhava yuktanam suranam isha vishmayam Mato satamana banga prashamayo pakalpate. Please chant. Nahi sad bhava yuktanam suranam isha vishmaya mato satamana banga prashamayo pakalpate. And the word for word for text 17 is as follows. Na, not. He, certainly. Sat bhava, with the mode of goodness. Yaktanam, who are endowed. Suranam, of the demigods. Isha, as controlling lords. Vishmaya, false identification. Mata, by me. Asatam, of the impure. Mana, of the false prestige. Banga, the eradication. Prashamaya, for relieving them. Ukalpate, as intended. And the translation for text 17. Since the demigods are endowed with a mode of goodness, the false pride of considering oneself the Lord should certainly not affect them. When I break the false prestige of those bereft of goodness, my purpose is to bring them relief. So this is Krishna talking. Purport. By the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The demigods are supposed to be sattva yukta, endowed with spiritual existence, since they are deputed servants of the Supreme Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita 4.24, it is stated, I'm just going to read the English, that which is duly offered to the Lord becomes spiritualized. The demigods engage in the devotional service of the Lord by managing various departments of cosmic administration. Therefore, as demigods or as servants of the Lord, their existence is pure sat bhava. When the demigods fail to live up to the high position given them by the Lord, Jitendra, can you put it on? When the demigods fail to live up to the high position given them by the Lord and deviate from proper behavior, they are not acting as demigods, but rather as conditioned souls. Mana, or false prestige, is certainly an anxiety-ridden burden for the conditioned soul. A falsely proud person is not truly peaceful or satisfied because his understanding of himself is false and inflated. When a servant of the Lord becomes asat, or irreligious, the Lord saves him from impiety by breaking the false prestige that has led him to be offensive or sinful. As stated by the Lord himself, Yasyaham anugranam harishyetadanam shanaha. Inverted commas. I give my blessings to a person by taking away his so-called opulence. Closed inverted commas. Of course, the advanced stage of devotional service to the Lord, as described by Rupa Goswami, is Yukta Vairagya, utilizing the opulence of this world to execute the Lord's mission. Obviously, the things of this world can be used wonderfully to spread the glories of God and to create a godly society. And a more advanced devotee will not be seduced by material paraphernalia, but will dutifully and honestly engage it solely for the pleasure of the Lord. In this particular case, Lord Indra forgot that he was a humble servant of God, and Lord Krishna therefore arranged to bring this bewildered demigod to his senses. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru, Shri Uttapadakamlam, Shri Guru Vaishnavam, Shri Rupam Sagrajatam, Sahagana Raghunatam, Vitam Sajivam, Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishaka Vitamscha. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapsa Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Rumpada Swami Iti Namine Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Navishesha Sunyavadi Pashachar Desha Tarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare So I'll just read the translation for 16 and 17 for today. 16, by my mystic power, I will completely counteract the disturbance caused by Indra. Demigods like Indra are proud of their opulence, and out of foolishness, they falsely consider themselves the lord of the universe. I will now destroy such ignorance. In text 17, since the demigods are endowed with the mode of goodness, the false pride of considering oneself the Lord should certainly not affect them. When I break the false prestige of those bereft of goodness, my purpose is to bring them relief. Krishna talking. In looking at Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, on these two verses, beginning with text 16, this is what he writes. So he writes, and it's a kind of summary of Krishna's statement in text 16. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur paraphrases, and he says, Krishna said, so Krishna's statement, according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I will remedy the situation through my mystic potency. And mystic potency in text 16 was the phrase Atma Yogena. And the situation that Krishna's referring to, that he's going to remedy, is this fierce rain that's full of hailstones. And it's so interesting, you know, one knows the word for stone as Shila, and that's the word that's used in the two verses I read that were to be read yesterday. The hailstone is called Shila Mayam. So literally it was like stones falling. And this problematic rainfall with these stone-like hailstones was actually out of season, because it was supposed to have been in a season that had already passed. Now, I've had the experience of hailstones in growing up. The houses had tin roofs, so every summer there would be several hailstorms. So when the hailstones were particularly large, and they would be sometimes, they were about an inch and a half, when they had hit a tin roof, it was completely terrifying, you know, thundering down, because, you know, it's really making a sound hitting the tin. So, and never mind actually being outside and actually being bombarded by the stones. I mean, one definitely needs shelter. So now Krishna's going to remedy this problem. So he's going to use his mystic potency. This is what he announces. And this mystic potency is such that Krishna is able to master mystic potencies, and in fact, he's the master of all the yoga systems. So his explicit instruction, so as the master of all yoga systems, the instruction he gives in Bhagavad Gita is to surrender to him. So this is the peak of all yogic systems, to come to this point of being able to submit to Krishna's instruction as the master of all yogic systems, to surrender to him. And in this way, if one's able to do this, one becomes the topmost yogi. So there's an example of Sanjay, who was able to relay or have it relayed to his heart by the grace of his spiritual master Vyas, the entire study of Bhagavad Gita. And therefore, he could relay what the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, was actually speaking about himself and his energies to all living entities. So this is that position of being the topmost yogi. He could understand, or Sanjay could understand, that by the mercy of Vyas, I have heard these most confidential talks directly from the master of all mysticism, Krishna, who was speaking personally to Arjuna. So that's his statement from Bhagavad Gita 1875. So Krishna explains that there are 8 primary and 10 secondary mystic perfections of yoga. And this is his conclusion, Krishna's conclusion. A yogi who has purified his existence by devotion to me and who thus expertly knows the process of meditation obtains knowledge of past, present, and future. He can therefore see the birth, death of himself and others. So there's a whole section in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto and the 15th chapter, and I've read the 28th verse. And I'm going to read it again because it's one of the mystic perfections, yogic perfections. And I'm using a particular example of somebody who possessed one of these perfections. And so I'm going to read this perfection again. A yogi who has purified his existence by devotion to me and who thus expertly knows the process of meditation obtains knowledge of past, present, and future. He can therefore see the birth, death of himself and others. So it means one, this mystic perfection is such that one is actually standing in one position in time, but can actually understand everything that's preceded time-wise, everything that's to come ahead, and particularly because if one's at least existing in the material world, one is able to actually see all the previous births. One can look ahead and see all the deaths of everyone, including oneself. So this is actually a mystic perfection. And this is exemplified by Sanjay, because that's exactly what he was able to relay to Dhritarashtra about what was taking place on the battlefield. He had that mystic ability, and in addition, he was able to directly hear the Supreme Personality of Godhead speaking to Arjuna. That being by virtue of his having entered into the disciplic succession through his spiritual master, Vyas. And here Krishna is stating that he's going to remedy the situation of this fierce rain with these hailstones by his mystic potency. So, looking at what potency Lord Krishna may be referring to, because there are 8 different ones, Krishna's statement is referring to his use of the mystic potency, which is also described in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in the 15th chapter. So here's the one that Krishna is going to use. And I'm quoting from the 11th canto. A yogi who has faith in me, absorbing his mind in me, and knowing that my purpose is always fulfilled, will always achieve his purpose by the very means he has determined to follow. So I'm going to read the Sanskrit for that because it's specifically significant in relation to this verse. Yata sankalpa yed buddhya, yada va mat paraha puman, mai satye mano yunjams, tata tat samu pashmute. So, a yogi who has faith in me, absorbing his mind in me, and knowing that my purpose is always fulfilled, will always achieve his purpose by the very means he has determined to follow. So, means that one's intention will come to fruition. And that's without fail, provided that it's resting on having faith in Lord Krishna and that one's mind is absorbed in him. So this has to be the position of the yogi. And this mystic power is called Yata Sankalpa Samsiddhi. It allows one to achieve one's objective. And this is interesting, even if one's objective is done at an inauspicious time. If this yogic perfection is there, and there's faith in Lord Krishna, and one's mind is absorbed in him, then that objective will be achieved, even if the time is inauspicious. So in Lord Krishna's case, he's called Satya Sankalpa. So he's in a very special position. He is one who's, so this is the phrase that's used in relation to Lord Krishna, the Satya Sankalpa, one whose desires, intentions, purpose, or resolve always comes to pass, so without fail. So the yogi is in that advantageous position. Also that because of his connection and his mind being absorbed in Lord Krishna, he comes to have his intention also being able to be fulfilled, even if it's under inauspicious circumstances. And in Krishna's case, it's without fail. His purpose, his desire, his intention, his resolve always comes to pass. And here, Lord Krishna is stating his intention. That's the verse from today. He puts it this way. Being falsely proud of their power due to the mode of ignorance, these demigods think of themselves as lords. I will now destroy this ignorance. So he's stating his intention. I will now destroy this ignorance. And Srila Vishwanath states that text 16, so this was text 16, by my mystic power, I will completely counteract this disturbance caused by Indra. Demigods like Indra are proud of their opulence, and out of foolishness, they falsely consider themselves the Lord of the universe. I will now destroy such ignorance. So, Srila Vishwanath states, in relation to text 16, that this refers not only to Indra, that he's going to destroy this destroy the ignorance. So he's going to destroy the ignorance not only of Lord Indra, but also of those demigods that assisted Lord Indra, because there was also Lord Vayu, because the winds allowed for this huge storm to take place, meaning that they moved the clouds and allowed them to release the hailstones. So one can generalize, just as Krishna does in Bhagavad Gita in 49, where he says that the mode of ignorance is in fact, and these are his words. No, first I'm going to use the words of Srila Prabhupada, where he describes what the mode of ignorance is. He says, it's a peculiar qualification of the embodied soul. And Lord Krishna's words about the mode of ignorance, the mode of darkness, this is his words, the mode of darkness born of ignorance is the delusion of all embodied living entities. The results of this mode are madness, indolence, and sleep, which bind the conditioned soul. That's from Bhagavad Gita 14.9. So Srila Prabhupada explains that everyone who's under the spell of the mode of ignorance becomes mad, literally mad. And a madman can't understand what's what. You know, something is one thing, but the madman can't identify it correctly. Because there's delusion. One's not seen correctly. So the actual definition of the mode of ignorance is that one cannot understand a thing as it is. And so this was the intention of Lord Krishna. He stated he was actually going to destroy the mode of ignorance or the ignorance that had come upon Lord Indra and the demigods who had assisted him. So in effect, one can understand he's going to destroy some madness that's come upon these demigods. And in these two verses, Lord Krishna is contrasting the mode of ignorance with the mode of goodness. So he says, the demigods are endowed with the mode of goodness. And this is how the mode of goodness is described. And this is from Bhagavad Gita 14.6. The mode of goodness, being purer than the others, is illuminating, and it frees one from all sinful reactions. Those situated in that mode become conditioned by a sense of happiness and knowledge. So, being in a kind of being that's either goodness or ignorance means that there's a psychological exhibition of some sort. So, an entity who's undergone a process of training, such that one is accustomed to believe or behave in a certain way means that one's also accustomed to accept certain circumstances. So in the mode of goodness, say for instance, one is accustomed to behave in a certain way during the course of one's day. One rises early, one chants the names, the Maha Mantra. One may come to the temple at a certain time. One will take one's meals at a certain time, and there'll be meals that have been first offered to Lord Krishna. So it means one gets accustomed to behave in a certain way. And one also becomes accustomed to accept certain circumstances. So it means that the circumstances that one finds oneself in, if one's functioning or one's being is more in goodness, means that one starts to experience some happiness, that life is very ordered. And also becoming trained in goodness. So this is all connected to this being the particular way of being of the demigods, means that one becomes very wise. And because of becoming very wise, one isn't affected by regular things that make people very unhappy in the material world. And there's a sense of moving forward in material knowledge. You know, one's understanding things more deeply, more properly. And this is possible, of course, because goodness means everything's very ordered, one's life is very ordered, so it allows one to be able to reflect more clearly and more thoughtfully on everything. So it's a process of training, and it becomes a way of being. And this is that goodness that the demigods are supposed to be functioning in. So it means that in goodness, one's accepting one's circumstances. That one is more or less free from any kind of sinful reaction. This is the very interesting thing. One is actually becoming free of the regular suffering that's going on in the material world. So this was the situation for the demigods. This was the type of learning that they had gone through. So their response to the circumstances is that they feel that they're very advanced in their knowledge, and they're also being trained so that their material circumstances are very much improved. So anybody who's living a life where they're going through this training of living a life that's allowing one to exist in goodness means that automatically one's material circumstances also become very much improved. And one feels a sort of material happiness because everything's very ordered, peaceful. One isn't undergoing so many reactions for sinful activities because the activities one's performing on a daily basis are in goodness. So one becomes attracted to working in a way that's in goodness. So in behavioral psychology, there's some examination of how learning happens. And generally, a person responds to a stimulus. So a stimulus comes, and that stimulus, you can also modify the learning or the conditioning that's happening. So experiments get done. So some of the earliest experiments were with animals. So for example, dogs may be in a room. A person is coming into the room and the person is bringing some food for the dogs. So the early behavioral psychologist Pavlov, he noticed that, and he measured it, the dogs salivated not only to the food that was coming, but they salivated when the person bringing the food was coming. Because in the mind, the association comes to be formed between the person bringing the food and the food. So you see the person and you salivate because it's associated with the food. So this is how learning happens. There's a lot of association that happens in the mind. So this is called classical conditioning or classical learning. And so in the same way, let's say, if one's functioning in goodness, so in one's mind, as one's performing very regular activities, it's associated with a sense of peacefulness. Like it's predictable what the next thing is that's going to happen. And so some happiness comes that there's order. So again, it's like association in the mind with the stimulus coming from the outside world. And for Lord Indra, for him, the stimulus to start to consider himself, so it's something that happens in the mind. You think of yourself, you think of your circumstances in a particular way. He started to consider himself the Lord of everything. And the stimulus for him was the worship that was being offered to him. So externally, there's worship being offered to him. So in his mind, that gets associated with, I'm the Lord of everything. So now, going back to these two verses where Lord Krishna is stating something of his intention. So remembering that his desires, his intentions, his resolve always comes to pass. He's in that particular position. So he says, When I break the false prestige of those bereft of goodness, my purpose is to bring them relief. So, clearly, if somebody in a more elevated position of goodness, like a demigod, is viewing the circumstances and has that sense of happiness and order, but is actually, in his mind, it's getting associated with, oh, I'm actually controlling all of this. Then it means that the goodness is leaving. Ignorance is set in because one's forgetting one's actual position. So Krishna states his intention is to correct this problem that has happened within the mind of Lord Indra. So, you know, behavioral psychologists may run experiments, like there's a whole field of cognitive psychology. So I always remember this particular experiment, which is very interesting. It's a very classic one. Somebody was having a particular fear that was a little bit unreasonable. So naturally, everybody's in a fearful condition in this material world, unless one is taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. But this particular person had a fear of matzo meal, so the flour that's used in a lot of Jewish cooking. And the fear got to the point where the person was afraid to turn on a tap, imagining that this matzo meal was going to come pouring out of a tap. So great was this person's fear of this matzo meal, for whatever the history was, perhaps being forced to eat it, I don't know. But so the way it was dealt with, because now you have to change the what has become associated in the person's mind. So matzo meal is associated with fear, whatever, however it was that fear arose through being forced to eat it or whatever it was. So the psychologists, and it's now coming to the point where the person's life is getting restricted because of this association in the mind. So the psychologists had to step by step get the person to move closer to a faucet, step by step, so that the person could eventually turn on the faucet and see that no matzo meal was coming out of the faucet. So you have to break the association in the mind. So here, Lord Krishna, he's planning to break this association in Lord Indra's mind that people are worshipping me, sacrifices are being offered to me, I am actually the Lord of everything, I'm controlling everything. So it's like not a reasonable belief, and it's the association in the mind has to be broken. So Lord Krishna, he actually states, I'm going to destroy this way of being that's in ignorance. So it's functioning like a behavioral psychologist, Lord Krishna, taking that role. So this is what he says. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he takes into account Lord Krishna's mystic power. This yata sankalpa samsiddhi, it means that his objective will always be achieved. So the behavioral psychologist has to go, you know, step by step by step. He knows he'll get to breaking the association in the mind of someone. In Lord Krishna, because he has mystic potency, he's going to achieve his objective no matter what. And so one understands that he's going to break this association in Lord Indra's mind. So, you know, so this is how Srila Kavi Kandapura puts it. Krishna explains something of his intention to the his family and friends in Vrindavan. Do not be afraid. Actually, this trouble is as significant as a hunger pain is to one who has consumed a sumptuous feast. Anyone practicing devotional service can easily remove all anartas. The Kinnaras and the demigods glorify this fact. For your benefit, I will now enact a special pastime to destroy Indra's mountain of pride. So we're going to see how Lord Krishna breaks the association in Lord Indra's mind, this one of receiving worship and then considering himself the controller of everything around him. So this is what I was able to extract out of these two verses where Lord Krishna is stating his intention to destroy Lord Indra's pride. So if there's any thoughts on this matter...
Hare Krishna Masterji, thank you for your class. I'm kind of trying to organize my thoughts, but you made a lot of wonderful points, and one of the main points that you were highlighting, you know, was extending on a verse of Andrew. Like most of us, you know, we consider ourselves the supreme controller, and we see this as a common theme in the scriptures where Indra, I'll just use Indra since it's convenient, you know, but there's
many. I'm not hearing you so well, Jai Baladev, for some reason.
Indra thought he was a supreme controller in this particular pastime because he thought he had control over who lives and who dies. But then Krishna humbled him, as the verse mentions. And in our lives, we may not try to kill others, even if we have those thoughts. But we do try to kill others' reputation. But we can see, like Prabhupada, The interesting thing is that I've heard this story. I can't reference it, but I've heard it many times over the years. The disciples came to Prabhupada and told Prabhupada, the newspapers are slandering Hare Krishna. And the devotees were very upset at this. But Prabhupada said, free publicity. As long as they mention the word Hare Krishna, the movement spread at that, because everyone are attracted to something that's forbidden. Prabhupada says, essentially, that's not crap, that's fertilizing. That helped the movement grow. So the lesson is that we have no control over, you know, whose reputation lives and who dies. But another point I'd like to highlight is that we see the great saints, we see that throughout their lives, they're less concerned about control and more concerned about self-control, because they intelligently contemplate that what is the use of ascending to power by gaining control on the outside, if you remove from power, like Indra, if you didn't gain self-control on the inside. So devotees are never trying to take the position of controller, because like, what is the use? I'm going to be removed from power. And this is the last point I would share with others. Maybe you could expand on some of these points, because it happens with many devotees I share with, talk to. This happened at least a few times with the same devotee I was talking to. And he told me, and many other devotees told me over the years too, and we've all gone through the same similar situation. He sometimes says, you know, how come some people ignore you, you know, when you speak to them? And because anyone could be self-controlled when people honor us, but try being self-controlled when people neglect us or dishonor us. So I was just sharing, there's many pastimes in the Bhagavatam where we jump to conclusions. Sometimes people ignore us for many reasons. One, because they didn't hear us. They didn't notice us. They would, like Parisha Maharaj, when he went to the sage Shamika Rishi, he asked the sage for a cup of water. The sage didn't hear him. He was in complete samadhi. And this is a point I was sharing with him, is that in chapter 2 of the Gita, Prabhupada mentions in one of his purports that the spirit soul is 1/10,000th the upper portion of a hair. He quotes a verse from the Upanishads. And he says also the soul by its constitution cannot be seen because it's spirit. So I told this devotee, you know, if we look at these purports and these teachings, we'll see it's actually a great blessing when people ignore us or don't acknowledge us, because they're reminding us of our constitutional position, insignificant. When the soul leaves the body, which is 1/10,000th of the portion over here, nobody's going to acknowledge us except Krishna. So, you know, however, I also share with him that our situation is not where majority of people ignore us, it's actually more like Daksha. Daksha entered the sacrificial arena, and 99.9% of the universe stood up in respect for him. One person ignored him, Shiva. And that was enough to take away 100% of his happiness. So we see in our lives, you know, there could be 99% of things going right. One thing goes wrong. Somebody ignores us, that's enough to take away 100% of our happiness. So my question is that if I had to ask a question, this is some points out, what are some steps we could take to give up this tendency, or what are some steps we could take to increase our gratitude and decrease our attitude? Because we see that Krishna says everyone has, we're not a great saint like Haridasa Thakur, where so many people are throwing us off a mountain, put us in a fire, or Haridasa Thakur beating us in 22 marketplaces. There are actually so many things we could be grateful for in life, but one thing goes wrong, we can't think of anything, just like a white wall with one black spot. So what are some steps we could take to, you know, recognize, you know, this gratitude? It's not so clear, but
yeah.
Share some points.
Well, you were predominantly highlighting the difficulty of being confronted with being dishonored in some way, ignored, and how contrasting that with there's no problem dealing with things if, you know, one was being honored. So, yeah, it's an interesting thought that the mind is not happy if one is being dishonored. So it means that the mind has already got a learned pattern that one expects acknowledgement. One expects some form of recognition. One expects some sort of praise. There's a learned pattern in the mind, and because one grows up that way, you know, one receives some praise, some recognition, some acknowledgement from one's superiors, one's friends, one's siblings. So that pattern is present in the mind. Now, the problem comes in if that pattern is present, but at the same time one is not acknowledging one's actual position in relation to the Supreme Lord, and that's something of what you were highlighting, the almost infinitesimally small being that one is, that being that's 1/10,000, the tip of a hair, meaning the soul that's inhabiting this body. So, so if one's acknowledging that one is the soul and is part of the Supreme Soul, Lord Krishna, then actually it makes sense that even when one is receiving recognition or praise or acknowledgement, one is internally also acknowledging that one is connected to Lord Krishna. So if this is coming one's way, one's thankful to Lord Krishna that one's receiving that acknowledgement, that praise, that recognition. That way one is not making that fault that Lord Indra made, where one takes it as one's personal right. So the way to, one has a right to receive those things, but simultaneously with this receiving recognition, praise, acknowledgement, there has to be that simultaneous acknowledgement of one's relationship with Lord Krishna, and one takes that positive that one's receiving and thanks Lord Krishna that this has come one's way by his kindness, because one understands he's controlling. So with that basic tenet in place, that he's controlling, then everything that's coming one's way of a positive nature, one's thanking him for. Because it's by his arrangement that that has come one's way. Now, on the other hand, let's say the negative is coming one's way, like you pointed out, the dishonor part. And you were saying how the mind is disturbed. Naturally, the mind is disturbed. The pattern is there in the mind that, you know, one's expecting recognition, praise, acknowledgement. And it's those things are necessary. One needs nurturing. One needs emotional nurturing. one needs encouragement. It's natural. One's a social being. So if instead one is getting dishonored, means that in fact what one has done, be they good things, one is getting trampled or even criticized for what one has done, or one is being pushed aside, even if the functioning is very positive, then, you know, your question is, you know, how does one really actually come to grips with that? Because it seems that, you know, the mind is like super disturbed, taking into account all the expectations one has for the positive. So it's a very challenging thing. I mean, persons go to professionals for intervention to deal with the disturbance in the mind. I mean, I described one simple thing of, you know, somebody dealing with fear. You know, one may look for external intervention to assist one in putting the mind back in order, back in a calm state, if it's very extreme. But like on a daily level, as one's functioning, these things come one's way. The being trampled, being unkindly treated, being you know, criticized in some way. So in those particular circumstances, taking into account this pre-existing pattern in the mind, where the expectation is certainly on the opposite end of the scale, one can take it and in a very detached manner try and see what has actually surfaced in the mind. So one may find that just by trying to be detached and looking at what's come up in oneself, is one highly distressed? So one may say, yes, highly distressed. Is one angry? One may say one has some anger. One may not have anger. One may just be distressed. Depends. So one can look at that, look at what's emerged in from the mind. And then when that's, whatever that emotional state has emerged, one then needs to consider, okay, how am I going to deal with this? And that was your question. It seems to be very difficult to deal with. So generally, like at least in from the cognitive psychology behavioral school of thought, the idea is to introduce a positive thought. So externally, some ill words were spoken to one. So one notices there's distress in the mind. It's associated with that external stimulus that's come that's very negative, ill words towards one. So internally, one has to do the job of actually keeping oneself intact. So that keeping oneself intact is simply a matter of introducing an extremely positive statement. Actually, I performed this particular task with great sincerity. I had in mind that it was being performed for the pleasure of Lord Krishna. Criticism has come my way. I'm feeling highly distressed, but actually, I know I did this work with the proper intention, with the proper care. So well done for having done it with proper care and with proper intention. This may not have been visible to the person who's criticized me. Fine. You've done your work. You've introduced the positive, accurate thought. On the other hand, it may be that you have to acknowledge that the criticism had some relevance. So one may say, I'm a little distressed at being criticized for what I've been doing. I see that there's some validity that I could actually improve something. Nevertheless, I'm a perfect, whole, intact human being who's a servant of Lord Krishna, and I wish to do something even better for Lord Krishna, so I'm going to make this little adjustment. Good that I heard this. I don't like how it was done, but I can use some of it to assist myself in my offering to Lord Krishna. So that internal association you make in the mind with what comes your way, to prevent it being like distressing, means that one has to intervene and say the positive statement. I mean, it's part of keeping oneself intact. It's part of caring for oneself. It's part of, you know, functioning in a happy way. And friends can sometimes help one do that. Sometimes, you know, one may share something and a friend, you know, may laugh and say, I don't even want to hear the criticism, because they support you. So a friend can help you. So at least, you know, you can say, well, my friend has also given me support that, you know, I don't have to concern myself so much with criticism. So again, I'm satisfied with what I'm doing, that it's coming from the right place, that I have the right intention, and I wish to do it as an offering for Lord Krishna. So, like that.
Thank you.
There's about two minutes.
So 2 minutes? I got 2 minutes? Is that what you're saying?
1 minute for you, one and a half minute for you, and half a minute for me.
Anyway, this is just an appreciation of your point, and maybe you could share a last point regarding that, because I really appreciate the point, because we need the help of somebody else. It doesn't matter how good a doctor is. When he's sick, he needs the help of another doctor. He can't perform surgery on himself. There's a nice quote that says, each and every one of us are angels with one wing, and we can only fly by embracing one another. But we see there's so many pastimes, like Ramachandra Puri. He received so much help. This is an appreciation of your point that reminded me, and this is the last point I want to make. And it really goes back to fault finding of devotees not appreciating devotees' situation, always criticizing. And so we see Ramachandra Puri received so much help from Lord Chaitanya, his spiritual master. This is what I was sharing with Jitendra last night. There's basically fertile association and futile association. Haridasa Thakur, he was beaten 22 marketplaces. He was surrounded by futile association on the outside, but because he surrounded himself with fertile association on the inside, the seed of his bhakti continued to grow. Now, Ramachandra was the complete opposite. He was surrounded by so much help, fertile association, but because he had the futile association of fault-finding and criticizing and not being grateful to devotees, the seed of his bhakti wouldn't grow. And so my question is, even if we receive so much help from devotees, we go to some other place. Why? Because of fault-finding, criticizing, and being hypocrites. You know, whatever we do, you know, we criticize other people for, we do the same thing. And so what are some steps we could take to Anyways, I would say that Narada Muni says it. I'll just answer it for myself because Narada Muni answers it for me. He says there are two types of way we can humble ourselves. Just like a seed cannot germinate in light, it must be buried in the ground. So Narada Muni says there are two kinds of austerities, and Krishna mentions the same thing in his verse from the Bhagavatam today. So this Narada Muni mentions this in the 10th canto, 10th chapter, I believe. It's the pass on Nalakuvan and Manigriva. He says there are two kinds of austerities or difficulties. Those who voluntarily humble themselves and those who are involuntarily humbled. But still, he says both of these situations are good because the seed of their bhakti will grow. But the situation of how we realize humility is dependent on us. Some are more embarrassing than others, so it's better to take the voluntary route. But either way, it doesn't matter. Krishna will give us these realizations to the degree we're offensive. And he says, the reason austerity and difficulties are good because when you're suffering from cancer or some terminal illness, these are involuntary difficulties. When you're suffering cancer, you don't fault find with anyone. You're not envious of anyone. You're so grateful to devotees. Whatever devotee association comes to show you love and respect, you're not going to be like, oh, I don't need your association, even though I'm on my deathbed. Whatever anybody comes to you, just like when Vishwakarma was on his deathbed, I had the fortune enough to go visit him twice, a few times. He was so grateful. He said, told the devotees, he was like, thank you very much. I'm so grateful. That's what he told the devotees, the few devotees who went to visit him. And so this is one that Narada Muni says. So we have a choice. We could voluntarily be humble or involuntarily be humble. So when we go through a difficulty, then we can learn to appreciate devotees instead of fault-finding like Ramachandra Puri. So anyway, these are some points, I'd like to always keep in mind. So thank you for letting me share. Hare Krishna.
Yeah. Yeah, there's always a choice. There's a choice of how one's going to process something. And choosing a humble route, it actually takes a lot of strength. So I don't think it's a casual thing. So especially if it's not really coming sometimes appropriately. So, choosing a humble position is a very glorious choice because, again, it's staying in goodness where one can observe what's happening more easily. If one doesn't take the humble route, like you were saying, one can go away. So then that's more the staying in the space of ego or the concepts one has, or letting the mind associate with, that's negativity that's come, one associates anger or distress with it. So one has to go past that. So it's a much more noble route to make the choice of a humble position where I'm going to continue to serve and do what I have to do in a way that's a way of being that's more in goodness. So it requires internal sorting, but continuing on the external proper behavior. And that's a very noble route. So, and it's the, it requires a lot of strength. So indeed at that time one can sometimes draw on the support of those that are caring for one. So yeah. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.